In this period of Ramadan, the holiest month in the Islamic calendar, we're reflecting on Muslims in Wisconsin communities and building connections. Thanks for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nearly three decades ago, Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition started as a local resource dedicated to promoting an accurate understanding of Islam and Muslim women. And reflecting on their work, hearing from you, how do you break down stereotypes? Are you celebrating Ramadan? How do you view this period of fasting and reflection? Can you share your traditions of how you break your fast and how your loved ones gather? 800-642-1234 to join in. Janann Najib is founding member and president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, where she directs the Islamic Resource Center. Janann, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Let's begin by acknowledging Ramadan. And for people who don't celebrate Ramadan, can you give us a better picture of this holy month of fasting?
Sure. Ramadan is actually the ninth month of the Islamic lunar calendar. And for Muslims around the world, this is an incredibly important and holy time. We fast from pre-dawn until sunset, from food, water. This is a time for us to really build our character. It's a time for us to really spend time with the Quran, the Islamic holy scripture, because as Muslims, we believe that, in fact, this is the month in which the Quran began to be revealed. It's a time of character building, a time of really building empathy for those that are less fortunate. So you find that charity is at an all-time high during this month. And what's really important, it's also a time that the community comes together. And so you find that not only do we have special prayers that happen every night in congregation, but people break their fast together. And so every single day out of the month, you find that a person is in fellowship with others.
Mm, that's so beautiful. And I'm wondering, you know, with the fasting from pre-dawn to sunset, can you explain the significance of the fast?
Sure. It's the idea is that, you know, we get very complacent in our lives every single day. You find that every day we eat, we get our Starbucks coffee. We're used to having everything at our fingertips. You know, you turn on the faucet, you have water, etc. So Ramadan is a time to really change things about. And when you start to kind of feel hunger and feel thirst, this is when you come to terms also with your own mortality, your own dependence upon God, the idea that, you know, everything that we receive as Muslims, we believe is a result of God's grace. And so this is a time to really reflect on that. And fasting is one of those ways in which you build your spiritual aspect as you deprive the physical part.
Mm. In this time of introspection and this time of prayer, I'm wondering if you could share what you hold in your heart this Ramadan. I'm wondering if you might share what you've been praying for.
You know, it's hard during this, these past 2 years to not share and to be thankful and to really pray for health, for not just individuals and families, but also, you know, for the world as a whole. There's been so much conflict. We've been very busy with the Afghan refugees that came here and the struggles, and also the millions that are on the verge of starvation now in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We think about Ukrainian refugees at this time. I think about as a person of Palestinian heritage, I think about the Palestinians and their suffering, particularly in Gaza. And so, you know, I think really about the world, because here we're pretty blessed. We have so many things available to us, but I just really think about the many people that are suffering. And then in our cities and in our country, in our inner cities, the violence that's taking place in Milwaukee, the families that are struggling, the people that have lost loved ones to gun violence. There's so many things to really think about, to pray about, and to try during this time of fasting, really to try and find solutions.
Janann Najib is with us, founding member, current president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, director of the Islamic Resource Center, as we discuss this time of Ramadan and we discuss finding Muslim communities in Wisconsin and what is that like, breaking down misconceptions. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. I understand the word Islam means submission to the will of God. Followers of Islam are called Muslims. Can you take us inside a mosque in Milwaukee? Give us some perspective on the sacred, the gathering space for worship and services.
Sure. This is what's probably really interesting. You could walk into a mosque anywhere in the world and you will find a lot of similarities. First of all, I think that when you walk into a mosque, one thing for people that, might be Christian or Jewish in particular, you'll notice that there are no chairs. There's carpet, and there might be chairs in back for those that have some physical challenges and are unable to do the prostrations and the bowing and bending for prayer. But in general, the space is empty. You'll notice also that there are no icons, so we don't have statues. As Muslims, we our places of prayer are empty of statues and empty of figures and pictures of individuals or even images of God, because we don't believe that God can be put into a finite image. We don't have pictures of, the prophet or Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, or any of the prophets, because again, we don't want our assumptions to reflect on then what that person should look like, and if that person should kind of represent us as opposed to representing the rest of humanity. And so our reflection is deeply on God. You may find calligraphy from the Quran, verses from the Quran. You might find the names of or attributes of God, the most merciful, the most compassionate, the most loving, these types of things. You'll also find what we call a minbar, or that's where the prayer leader, the imam, for example, will stand and lead the prayer. That's where they stand. But you will find that when the prayer is led, the imam stands at the same level as all the members of the congregation. Hmm. So he does not stand higher than them at all. You'll also find that every mosque is directed, and all the people that pray will direct their faces and stand facing the Kaaba, which is in Mecca in present-day Saudi Arabia. And the Kaaba is that stone, the square structure that many people probably have seen, where people go in pilgrimage and go around it. And it's very interesting because there's absolutely nothing in that stone structure. It's just a square structure, but what it represents is the first house built on earth for the worship of one God. And so it was built by Prophet Abraham and by his son Ishmael. And so when Muslims pray, wherever they might be in the world, they will face that direction to symbolically show that they worship the one God, the God of Abraham. And you will find the congregations, the women and men pray separately, because our prayers are not just spiritual, but also physical. Mm. And so We stand shoulder to shoulder, very close when we stand and pray together, and we move as one unit. And so we will stand, we will bow, we will prostrate. And so as one, kind of as one beating heart, we will all move together. And there's a, you know, when there is like our Friday congregational prayers, there will be a sermon, but otherwise during Ramadan, you will find it so beautiful because from the first day of Ramadan to the end, they will recite the Quran in its entirety. It will be divided into 30 parts, and every night they will recite the Quran really in gratitude to God for sending us this beautiful guidance.
Janann Najib, founding member, president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, director of the Islamic Resource Center. What would you like to know about the Muslim community in Wisconsin? Are you celebrating Ramadan? How will you celebrate the end of Ramadan on May 2nd? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're discussing Muslim communities in Wisconsin, the work to foster inclusion, to put a stop to discrimination and stereotypes. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Washington-based Muslim Advocates works to protect the civil rights of American Muslims. And it says hate crimes against American Muslims are at an all-time high. And its key issues to seek justice for victims and to fight against hate speech that incites violence. Are you a Muslim American who relocated to Wisconsin? Have you felt unwelcome or do you worry about anti-Muslim acts? Muslim women, do you choose to wear a hijab that covers your hair, your neck, your shoulders? What do people ask you and how do you respond? 800-642-1234. Janann Najib leads the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition and is with us for the hour. I want to talk about your journal, the founder of the Wisconsin Muslim Journal. This is online publication. It's free. What role do you think has this had in sharing information and what role has the media had in creating misconceptions of Muslims in the U.S.?
Well, you know, we're very excited about the journal because, and we started it only about, I think, 4 years ago or so. It started during the previous presidential administration when there was so much misinformation being presented about Muslims and the Islamic faith. And we realized that too often people are discussing us and many times the people discussing us don't like us very much. And so it was really important to us to be able to have our own format and our own, you know, method of reaching the broader community and sharing our stories, who we are, and particularly here in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Muslim Journal really aims to share the stories of Muslims living in Wisconsin, working here, playing here. You know, we raise families, we have so many professionals in different walks of life. And we just wanted to share their stories and to let people know who their Muslim neighbors really are, what they believe, what issues are of concern to them, what are the things that matter to them, and to help them realize, you know what, this community is part of our community and is not so different than us. And by taking our narrative and presenting it ourselves, we are hopeful that we will help to dispel the stereotypes that are out there.
Oh, I can see how this journal would really help build those bonds and those bridges, being able to speak that narrative from your heart. Can you tell, like, maybe some of the stories that the authors want people to know about or what people are writing about?
Oh, there are so many stories.
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah, there are so many stories, honestly. Some of the ones that really stand out to me are For example, some of the Muslim creatives out there, the artists and some of the unique things that they're doing. We ran quite a number of articles during the pandemic because we probably have, and people don't realize it, the Muslim community probably has an overrepresentation of medical professionals, doctors and nurses on the front lines, because not only for those that were born and raised here in the United States, but many immigrants, they call it a brain drain to the West. Some of the brightest are here in the United States, including in Wisconsin. So there isn't a single hospital or clinic that you won't find a Muslim doctor or nurse or respiratory therapist. Some of the stories that I always found really unique and exciting, for example, about a Muslim female farmer, out in some small area in Wisconsin, a small town in Wisconsin, or hearing about some of the, for example, the Somalis that have made home in rural Wisconsin as well. And just to be able to tell all of these different stories, it's really exciting.
We're talking with Janann Najib, who is the leader of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, the president, director of the Islamic Resource Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we build a greater understanding of Muslim communities in Wisconsin. You can share your story. Sam from Sheboygan called and couldn't stay with us. And Sam wondered about how the media adds to misconceptions about Muslim faith and traditions, and then how you go about trying to repair that and kind of dissolve those myths.
Thank you. That's really an excellent question. And honestly, the media has been instrumental in spreading a lot of the myths. We're so thankful to really places like Wisconsin Public Radio that presents accurate depictions and allows us to represent ourselves. But there's a lot of media out there that unfortunately not only promotes myths, but have been politicized along with certain, elected officials, certain talking heads on particular shows. So it is really important for us to have the opportunity to represent ourselves. I think there's been a realization in society that, when you want to talk about a particular group, you need to have them at the table. But yet we find that when it comes to the Muslim community, that's still not the case. Mm-hmm. Many times people are explaining us without us being present. And so the way that we try to really dispel that, I think, has been the mission of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition for, like you said, close to 30 years, by creating opportunities. We have networking brunches where we invite people and bring community together. We have seminars, we have book clubs and author talks, and we go out into the community and give presentations. This evening I'm going to be, there's a breaking of the fast at the Milwaukee School of Engineering, MSOE in Milwaukee, and I will be speaking there. And so they're inviting an interfaith group. And so all of these types of opportunities, it's kind of, almost one-on-one, trying to help people understand. And I think that there have been a number of surveys that have shown, Pew Research surveys, I can't remember exactly when, but I've quoted it a number of times, is that they have shown that when a person knows another Muslim or they know a Muslim, their image of Islam and Muslims is incredibly positive. Mm-hmm. And it's tends to be almost always those that have never met a Muslim that have a negative image of Islam and Muslims. And I can see this being across the board with other faiths and communities that are not, very well known. And so I always say to people, especially those that have you know, come to know us, is that the best thing that people can do is when they're at their own family gatherings and, you know, their Uncle Bill that is spouting their mouth, everyone has an Uncle Bill spouting and talking about those Muslims, to really kind of stop it there and explain, you know, the Muslims that they've met. And this is really how transformation happens. And then, of course, I think a big role is going to be the media. Once there's more representation of Muslims in the media, and also more representation of Muslims in the political sphere, that's when change will start to happen.
We have Janann Najib, who is the founding member of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. As we examine the Muslim experience in Wisconsin, the key core beliefs of Islam are the five pillars. We've been talking about them. What do you want to know about them? What questions do you have about how Muslims interpret Islam? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. In this holy month of Ramadan, we explore the Muslim experience in Wisconsin communities on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Biden issued a statement extending best wishes to Muslim communities, quoting the Quran that whoever does even an atom's weight of good will see its results. Do you attend a mosque or find community in an Islamic center? How do you practice and observe your faith in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 to join in. Janann Najib is president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. And Charles Cohen is here, professor emeritus of history and religious studies at UW-Madison, former director of the Lubar Institute for the Study of the Abrahamic Religions. Charles, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, can you give us a bit of a refresher here on the interconnectedness? What are the Abrahamic religions?
Well, they're usually identified as Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And it's sometimes thought or argued that Islam constitutes a separate civilization that's antithetical to the teachings of Judaism and Christianity. And I would argue strenuously against that. In my view, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam comprise a family of religions. They share many things, notably belief in the one God, in Ibrahim as the fountainhead of each tradition, a scriptural tradition that is sort of interreferential, referring back and forth to each other. Mm. And they've been historically linked. I can't go into it here, but ideas have passed back and forth between Muslims, Christians, and Jews. There are obviously differences. But again, I think if we think of them as a family, an extended family, we can emphasize and get a sense of the connections between them.
And all three religions have that same geographical roots in the Middle East and holding Jerusalem as a very special place for their faith.
You're right to point that out. As you read through the scriptures of each of the traditions, as you just study the traditions, the same places come up. And while Mecca, of course, is the holiest place for Muslims, Jerusalem is the third most. And we know how important that is, of course, for Jews, for whom it is the holiest place, and for Christians as well.
just some demographics here. Is Islam growing in the U.S.? Are we finding more Muslim communities in Wisconsin?
Certainly Islam is growing in the United States. There are disagreements about how large the Muslim population may be, but I think there's no doubt that the growth trajectory is upward, maybe 2.5 million at the beginning of the 2010s. The estimates I've seen now are at least something like almost 3.5 million as of 2017, and close to 4 million in 2020.
Janann, would you mind tracing your roots for us? And as you see Muslim communities growing in Wisconsin and around Milwaukee?
Sure. I grew up in Milwaukee, actually, but I came to the United States at 3 years of age. I'm Palestinian, born in Jerusalem. So I'm a naturalized citizen. But in some ways, I see myself as a third generation, because my grandfather was a peddler, a businessman at the time. He used to travel between Palestine and the United States. And for whatever reason, Milwaukee was one of his stops. And he actually is buried in Milwaukee. He died here when my father, who is his eldest child, was only 16 years of age. So I never met my grandfather. And in fact, you know, my father was a teenager when his father died. But interestingly, my father then went back to Palestine, got married. I was born there. One of my brothers was born there. And then we came here to visit. And then the 67 war broke out, and Palestinians that were outside the country were not allowed back in by Israel. And so we remained here. But my father, about 5 years ago, had traveled overseas, and he passed away there. And so he is really buried. He is buried there. And so my grandfather is buried in Milwaukee, but my father is buried overseas.
Oh, wow. Janann Najib is founding member and president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. Charles Cohn is here, professor emeritus in history and religious studies at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Saeed from Green Bay. Hello, Saeed. Go ahead.
Good morning, Kayna. Good morning to Janann. My question is, I wanted to ask Janann about her advice on the following two important ideas. One is teachers who are having kids who are fasting in their classes. And the second one is companies who employ Muslim individuals who are fasting. So what advice will you give to this group?
Great questions on fasting, teachers having students in their class who are fasting, and what companies can do to support employees who are in this time of fasting, Janann.
Thank you very much for that very important question. I think teachers definitely have a very important role, especially with the growing number of Muslim students that are present in the school system, and allowing them to take the lunch hour to really relax in the library, or just take a rest, or whatever it is that they'd like to do. You will find actually many students and many kids would like to sit with their friends during lunchtime, and they will keep them company by doing all the talking. So sometimes that's not an issue, but for some kids, and you will find that by choice, although fasting is considered required when you reach puberty, sometimes you have kids that are younger than that will insist on fasting. And so they can break the fast if they get really tired, because they're not required to fast. But I think making those accommodations, and just kind of during gym, for example, if it seems that they're getting a little bit worn out, to give them a little bit of a break, because you know, this is a very important time, allowing them to make certain things up, particularly if exams fall on the holiday, for example. And also, and same thing with companies, and keeping in mind that, company events, trying to be cognizant of when Ramadan is, and the idea that you know, the Muslim employees cannot participate at that time. Contrary to common assumptions, no, it does not bother us if you eat in front of us. Life goes on. It does not bother us, nor are we concerned about that, because we have our own practices, and it should not affect others. But I think just being kind at that time and trying to see how to support these individuals. We got, in fact, an email a few days ago from teachers at South Division High School here in Milwaukee, which has a significant number of Muslim students, particularly some of the refugee students, the Burmese and the Rohingya. And so many of them have been asking, because during the lunchtime, they want to do their prayer. We have 5 daily prayers that are required. And especially in Ramadan, they want to make the time to do that. And so a couple of very, wonderful teachers took the initiative to create a room for the students. And so they reached out to us to see if we would provide some prayer rugs, some prayer mats, which we are doing. But they said the first day, 30 students showed up to do the prayer. So we can see that there's more diversity in our schools, there's more diversity in our businesses. And so whatever a person's faith is, there's so much value and so much richness in seeing that diversity and allowing people to be happy by being who they are. And I think that that's the most important thing, to allow them to be who they are. And for teachers and even for businesses themselves, there are more and more teachers and businesses are making the effort to allow Muslim employees to explain what Ramadan is. We have employees that sometimes come in from different companies asking us for posters or brochures that they can share, with their fellow employees, just to explain about it, or to have a board where they can hang something up, just to promote understanding. Education and broadening one's horizons is wonderful. Yes.
I want to turn to the situation around refugees, and Louise in Michigan City, Indiana, is going to start us off on the situation with refugees. Louise, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I subscribe. How I know about this show. Yes, Gina, and I wanted to ask you, what role is your organization playing in resettling Afghan refugees, and are you getting local, state, federal support for that work?
Louise, thank you for that question. And, and I want both of you to respond to refugees and Charles giving us some of that history. Janann, you go first on the situation with refugees.
Sure, yes. We, as an organization, we got very involved when the Afghans came in. The images of the Afghans really hanging from planes was very troubling to us, particularly after 20 years of working with the United States. And so as an organization, we mobilized and we recruited and encouraged people within the community, the broader community, to help donate and support brand new clothing and items that were needed. And we sent 6 shiploads to Fort McCoy. And in fact, my organization was the only Muslim organization and one of the only community organizations that was invited to come and to be briefed at top levels. We were joined by Congresswoman Gwen Moore and Ilhan Omar. And then as the refugees were being resettled, particularly here in Milwaukee, Kentucky, we created a buddy program to pair up many of the Afghan kids, particularly middle school and high school, with kids that grew up here in the United States, because we felt that, and our experience with previous refugee communities is that bullying and really being out of place is difficult. But if you have someone that can help you navigate that's really that's a really important aspect. And most of our donations, in fact, all of our donations have been from private donors. We're not a resettlement agency, so we don't get government funding to do this.
Turning to you, Charles, as you see refugees from Syria, from Rohingya refugees, now Afghanistan, what can you tell us from a historical context about Muslim refugees in Wisconsin and resettling here?
Well, I think, I just note that Muslims have been coming to, the United States before it was the United States, and they've been coming for a variety of reasons. The first Muslims were part of the African slave trade in the 17th and 18th centuries. And I think it might also be relevant to say Muslims are coming not only as refugees, they've come to the United States throughout our history for many of the same reasons that other people have come here. For greater opportunity, because they've been pushed out of their own countries. And so I don't want us to think of Muslims in the United States simply as refugees, because that, I think, gives us a too narrow sense of what those populations and what those communities are.
How did the 1965 Immigration and Naturalization Act affect the Muslim population in the U.S.?
It's really, to my mind, an important inflection or turning point. The act does away with national origin quotas, and so allows people from Asia, from the Pacific, greater access to the United States than they had before. And there's the real explosion in Muslim populations in the United States comes after 1965.
We have Emeritus Professor Charles Cohn, formerly directed the Luber Institute for the Study of the Abrahamic Religions at UW-Madison. Janann Najib is here, president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. You can join in, you too. What do you want to know about the early history of Muslims in the U.S., in Wisconsin? Did you know American Muslims who have been in the U.S. for generations? What questions do you have about building trust, about building understanding? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment, more conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Muslim holy month of Ramadan started this month, a time of prayer, time of reflection, a time for the Islamic practice of fasting from pre-dawn to sunset. And in Minneapolis, the city council decided that the Muslim call to prayer can be broadcast outside of mosques several times a day, like the way churches ring their bells. NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday spoke about this with Imam Makram Numan El Amin in Minneapolis.
I've had the privilege and honor to travel the world and to many Muslim countries, and to hear the call proclaimed at the time of prayer for us is definitely a soothing to our spirits and our souls, but it also helps to keep us orientated, keeping, the God, the Creator, first and foremost in our lives.
How do you celebrate Ramadan? How does your mosque come together? 800-642-1234. Janann Najib leads Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. Charles Cohn, Professor Emeritus in the UW-Madison History Department. They're with us for about five more minutes. Janann, I want to ask you about Minneapolis and broadcasting the call to prayer. Can you explain what is the call to prayer that is chanted in Arabic and why it is so sacred?
Yes, and congratulations to Minneapolis for doing that. I hope that, you know, any areas that have large Muslim populations are able to do that as well as we enjoy, you know, listening to the church bells. It's very important because wherever you are in the world, that's what calls you to the five daily prayers. And as the Imam had mentioned, it kind of orients your life because for practicing Muslims, we schedule our life around our five daily prayers. And it's a beautiful tradition. You know, when the words for the call to prayer are basically, God is the greatest. God is the greatest. There is no God except the one God. Muhammad is a messenger of God. Come to prayer, come to prayer, come to success. And so these are the words. And the idea of using the human voice to call people to pray and reminding them in their busy days. As Muslims, we believe that you know, God has to be really centermost always in our mind and in our life. Mm-hmm. And so we get caught up in our daily lives. And so at you know, five times a day, we are required to really to stop and to meditate, to pray. And so that grounds us, that brings that sense of grounding, that sense of really that soothing presence of God reminding us. And that kind of presence helps us to get through the day. So whatever difficulties we're having, we remind ourselves that there's a creator greater than us that can handle everything. And so it's a very important part of our life.
Thank you for that. Charles Cohen, I want to go back to you a bit more history here, as Muslims were prominent in the 60s civil rights movement. But I just want to understand a little bit more. Is the Nation of Islam the same as Islam? Because, you know, as we saw in the civil rights movement, the Nation of Islam had a role there.
Everything about the Nation of Islam is controversial. The quick answer would be that for many Muslims, particularly those coming after 1965, the teachings of the Nation of Islam are, let me just say, suspect. There are references to Islam. There are the nation's discipline, its sense of trying to create purity within one's body derives at least substantially from Muslim dietary practices. No alcohol, for instance. Mm. But there are the movement. I would want to understand the Nation of Islam as more a reaction to American racism. Mm. And the ways in which certain African Americans tried to deal with that. I should also note that there was a split in the nation and that a substantial group eventually became, if we can call them, Orthodox Sunni Muslims. Mm. Louis Farrakhan's movement now has kept up the old ways and might be understood, I would understand it, as a Black nationalist and separatist movement.
And we're going to have to carry this conversation forward. It is a really great jumping off point. And I want to wish both of you blessed Ramadan. As Charles Cohen, Professor Emeritus of History at UW-Madison, Janann Najib, founding member of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.